Thank you for joining us and welcome to another edition of Answers Network. I'm your host, Alan Cardoza. And for those of you that have been listening, sending in questions and comments, thank you so much. And please continue to help spread the word that every Monday from 11 a.m. to noon Pacific time, this show will bring on special guests that can inspire, educate, and in some cases, entertain, while bringing answers and options to making our lives happier, healthier, and more successful. And I'd really appreciate it if you could all do me a big favor. Please forward one of our shows to your social media group and to someone you know who can benefit from a particular subject. This is one powerful way that we can make a positive influence in the world together. Now, today, and for the next 4 weeks, we're going to celebrate women. And what better way to start than with a woman who passionately shares insights and inspiration, empowering women to unlock their authentic selves in business and in life. Now, Christiana Chaffee is a seasoned leader with a rich background in the United States Army and the biotech industry. She has recently embarked on a transformation career that is a journey in regards to as an empowerment ambassador, I think is the best way to put it. She's also a speaker, and she's now an author of her new book, An Unapologetic Spinster. Christiana's dynamic journey started as the United States Military Academy at West Point and followed by 5 years serving as an officer in the U.S. Army with 2 years deployment in Iraq. Now, as a decorated combat veteran, she has been awarded the Bronze Star Combat Action Badge and an Army Accommodation Medal. Now, as a breast cancer survivor, she also embodies resilience, a trait evident in both her personal and professional pursuits. Her love for challenges extends beyond the boardroom, though, because manifesting herself as an avid runner of distances up to 50 miles and a scuba diving enthusiast. Now, you can contact Christiana on LinkedIn, or you can visit her website, which we're going to put in the show notes. So don't worry. And if you're driving out there, don't worry. Everything will be out there for you. So, Christiana, welcome to Answers Network.
Thank you so much for having me, Alan. Pleasure to be here.
Well, as we were discussing a little bit ahead of time, is that, you know, I put together some questions, and there's a lot of things that I really like about the book and the way that you've put it together. But I got so many interesting questions that were sent in to us ahead of time. Kind of want to start with some of those. So one of which I thought was quite interesting, and this one reads, after more bad dates than I can admit to, I started a blog with some of my friends from college, and I found that I wasn't alone. What inspired you to start blogging about your dating experiences and then turn them into a book? And this is from Rita in Dallas, Texas.
Well, I love that question. Thank you to Rita for sending that in. Well, for me, I mean, we must be very similar, because that's exactly what I started to do, was write a blog when I felt that I was having these dead-end dates, and it just felt like I was on a hamster wheel, and there just didn't seem to be much positivity in it. But my writing a blog, which was a couple of years ago, because I turned it into a book, writing the blog was what actually helped me change my perspective. Putting words to paper was allowing me the opportunity to almost rewrite my perspective and how I was seeing these dates. So where I had gone on, you know, I've gone on a couple hundred first dates, and that's a lot. I think that there is also an opportunity for each individual date to see good that comes out of it, you know, an opportunity to go somewhere different, meet somebody new, learn something different. And through that, you know, what some people would call unfortunate or awkward moments happened, I tried to find the humor in them. So I used my humor in a written form to bring out a different positive perspective. And as I did that, I actually was changing as a person. I ended up changing jobs and after I started my blog a couple months into it. But my very, you know, secret network of blog readers, they loved it. And they kept asking, give me more, give me more. But I was a marketer at the time. I'd been a marketer for 12 years after my military career. So I used my book, writing a book, as something that was another creative yet a different level of writing. So if you're loving your blog, I would encourage you to consider writing a book and putting it out there for even more people to read.
Well, and again, when this came in, and because obviously I know that the book is set up that way, I just thought it was a perfect way to start. Now, for those people that haven't had a chance to read the book like I have, share a little bit about the book, the way that you have it set up. Again, some of the things that I like is mm-hmm. the fact that you not only feel like you're getting some insight. Well, let me put it this way. As a guy, I felt like I was getting a little bit of insight into the woman's playbook.
That's quite possibly true. I'm just one woman, so my perspective may not encompass everybody's, but there's definitely, I think, talking with my girlfriends who are going through dating experiences too, I think I do capture a lot of relatable perspectives from women out there dating. I think that the book is very different than what else is out there. If you go on Amazon and you look for dating books, I encourage your listeners and your viewers to not do this. Don't go pick up another dating advice book that says how to text a guy or how to flirt with somebody. I think those are advice books that are helping, teach you to be somebody that, that society thinks you're supposed to be, but mm-hmm. that's not really what it's about. So I created my book to kind of take you through. It's generally sequential, but it's not written totally sequentially. Each chapter is its own dating experience. And it just takes you through my journey as I'm having all of these different yet relatable experiences. So it's not a dating advice book. It is definitely more about, I describe it as a mix of Sex in the City and Eat, Pray, Love.
I've seen both of them. So, I would say the same thing that, that if you envision the difference between, a dating advice book is it's like you're in a classroom and there's somebody at the head of the class that's saying, do this, do this, do this, as opposed to going, here are some experiences that you might be able to relate to. And by the way, sometimes they're really funny.
Well, and in that, writing of the stories, part of my chapters were written during COVID. And I did a little bit of an experiment. You couldn't go to bars. I was living in Boston at the time. The bars were completely shut down. So we had to be creative when we went out on dates. And that was usually walking around the city, which I also thought was a great way to explore mm-hmm. the city because I didn't grow up in Boston. And so I did an experiment with, how much can I get away with without wearing makeup or doing my hair? Or maybe I'm even going on a walking date, literally wearing workout gear. And I found that it didn't matter what I looked like, what I wore, how much makeup I had on. It was really about who I was when I showed up as a person. How did I engage with that individual? Did they feel welcome with me in my presence? Did I listen to them? Did I engage with them? Did I ask them questions? And that to me, is really one of the big parts of having a successful date. And you don't hear that in dating apps, in the dating books. You don't read that. It's about being somebody else, but really you just need to be you and be a genuine version of you that cares enough to, spend time with somebody for 30 minutes, an hour, whatever, however long mm-hmm. that date lasts.
Well, and before I go into some of the other questions, I would love for you to share one of the experiences, because again, as I scanned through some of them, I found some of them to be educational, but in some cases, quite humorous.
Oh, well, one of my favorites was meeting Bigfoot. So, and I went on a date for a few weeks. I dated Bigfoot. So what happened was I love to run, as you mentioned in the intro, and I was doing a 40-mile race and it was in the woods and it was a looped course. So we were doing the looped course, 10 miles, four times each, which sounds crazy, but honestly, it was actually quite enjoyable. I was going very slow, by the way. So during that race, out of nowhere, Bigfoot comes running down the trail towards me. And at first I was like, what is that? And it was scary. But then I realized it was just a person in a Bigfoot costume. And it, when it became apparent they were not there to harm me and I was not in any danger, it was actually quite funny because I realized that the race directors had put that on for this person to run opposite to us on the course and kind of just bring some levity to what would be, you know, an all day running event. And so I write in my book in one of the chapters about how I came across Bigfoot a couple miles later and I scared Bigfoot. So it was a little bit of karma happening, but you know, we ended up talking and, you know, I took a break cause I wasn't, you know, a serious, competitor on the, in the race. We ended up meeting after the race and dating for a little bit. So it's just an example of you never know where you're going to be and who you're going to bump into. But if you're enjoying yourself and having fun doing whatever it is you're doing, even if it's crazy, like running in the woods for an entire day, you never know what's going to happen. And that was probably one of the best ways I've met somebody that I've dated.
I think it's hilarious. And how many people can say that? Dating Bigfoot.
I don't know. Maybe he does that. Maybe that's his thing, right? Maybe that's how he picked up women. So there could be other people that have met that Bigfoot, but.
well, there's somehow there's another meeting group there somewhere.
Yes.
put something out. How many of you can say, there's another, okay. So now this one comes in, this one reads, and again, I want to thank those that take the time to do this. I know many people work in the middle of the day, so to send in the questions ahead of time, I think is wonderful. This one reads, I'm a 42-year-old divorced woman currently living alone while my only child has moved away to college. I have single girlfriends who have looked for dates online and or in bars. This doesn't sound appealing to me right now. What advice would you give to me and other single women who are looking for love and happiness, but doing so on their own terms? And this is from Bonnie in Portland, Oregon.
Well, Bonnie, I'm 41, almost 42. So I'm right there with you. And kudos to you for, you know, having a marriage, it not working out, and then getting back out there. Because there's so many people that just kind of give up, whether it's a marriage. And for me, it was a 10-year relationship that was failed at the age of 36. And so I went out there and was trying to figure this out. So the question you're asking is really very relevant to anybody who's getting into the dating world when they haven't seen or experienced maybe much of the dating apps and this modern way of dating. So, you know, my advice to you is don't do something that doesn't, you know, sound fun to you, right? So mm-hmm. either if something is of interest, then maybe you can grow to enjoy it more. But if online dating or going on dating apps is, if you have no interest in trying it, then I would say maybe don't try it now. Try other things. You know, I have tried it all. I just heard the story about me being out in the woods meeting somebody, but I've tried to meet people, make eye contact, see if there is chemistry in person, really anywhere I go. And, you know, the bar would be one of them. But I do think the challenge of today's society is a lot of people rely on the dating apps. So if you're not on a dating app, then they're never going to look at you twice because they're only finding dates through dating apps. And I don't know why that is. That's just how some people are. Me personally, I am not on any dating apps because I did a whole lot of that and I just didn't find it to be a good use of my time, my energy, or my money. And so I decided to do more organic, you know, meeting people out and about. So my advice, if you're not going to look at dating apps anytime soon, and you're not having any success just being out with your girlfriends at a bar, then figure out what else is of interest to you, right? You know, do you like to cook? You know, do you mm-hmm. want to go to cooking classes? Maybe meet people there. For me, you know, scuba diving was it's a community. And so I picked up scuba diving to meet other people. And also it tends to be more male dominated in the people that do scuba diving. So I thought my odds were fairly good.
The odds, I like
yes. It. So I was marrying up what are my interests and where will other people be? And I would look at kind of hobbies and expand yourself. So you're not relying on just your girlfriends and you can do things, you know, with your only child out of the house, what can you do for you? And that to me is the best bet to meet somebody who then's going to have similar interests to you.
Well, I like that. And Bonnie, to add to that, you know, if you're somebody who likes running and you join a running group, you might meet Bigfoot too. So you know, there's lots of possibilities out there.
How true.
Yeah. But no, I like that where it talks about, you know, figure out what it is that you like. You know, I think that's going to be the first, you know, the first thing that makes sense. So one of the questions that, you know, that I wanted to bring up because, I'm in my 60s. So the idea of the word spinster being used in the title, mm-hmm. was intriguing to me. So what inspired you to put that title, you know, the unapologetic spinster, what drew you to the fact of using this, and, you know, and how does that kind of fit, or how did you feel that fit best with the book?
Mm-hmm. So I came up with the title soon after I started writing it, and it just kind of hit me because I am a pretty confident person. I haven't always been confident, but I've, you know, through my journey, and I think dating's been a big part of that, I've learned to appreciate myself more and become more confident. And with a certain, you know, confidence, there's this unapologetic aspect of it. It's me being me. And it's not meaning that I'm arrogant or I'm putting, you know, forcing myself on anybody in my personality. It is me being me and not worrying about what other people think. And so that was a big theme of my book is, you know, finding love and what love means to me and the type of person that I'm looking for. So being unapologetic about that. And then the spinster part, it's really a poke at society. Now, spinster is clearly an antiquated word. It is Yep. not used in today's society, but it is, I think, the idea of a spinster does still apply in today's society. So if you think about a man who's, you know, turning 40 and he's never been married, he's, you know, a bachelor. And some might think, oh, he's been focused on his career. Now he's going to meet somebody wonderful. And now is the time for him to have a kid. I was approaching 40, never married. And I had a lot of people asking me, what's wrong with you? Why haven't you met somebody? Mm. And so that's kind of a, you know what, I am a spinster, if you want to use that antiquated word. I use it in jest, but it's kind of like, I don't care what society thinks about me and where I should be. I'm right where I'm supposed to be. And honestly, I'm really loving life and I'm unapologetic about who I am and where I am.
Yeah. And one of the visions that I had when I looked at the name and I thought, I wonder if her mother or her favorite aunt or someone, you know, said, honey, do you really know what this word means? So I think that's great. Now, what you just talked about has to do with kind of society's importance, you know, or the emphasis on relationships, and which I think it's worldwide. I think it's more than just a, mm-hmm. you know, a U.S. or an American thing. So why do you think that, you know, it's kind of crucial to kind of challenge this notion, you know, that being alone equates to loneliness? How did we get to this point, I guess? I'm glad that you're challenging it, but how did we get to this point? Is this been a marketing scheme all along mm-hmm. that if you don't do this, you know, you're just going to be lonely? And I love the fact that you're challenging that.
Yeah. Well, so I think what you're talking about is the difference between alone, being alone and being lonely. And mm-hmm. that is, I think there is definitely a difference there. I think it stems from, you know, similar to what we just talked about, I think it stems from just society and how, you know, men or women, if you're single, people assume that you are lonely. But there's also an aspect of it where I think a lot of people that are saying that or thinking that are in perhaps relationships themselves. And then they're kind of projecting onto other people, like, why aren't you in a relationship? And I don't want to pass judgment. I mean, my journey is my journey, but I do try to find compassion and empathy for people who assume that I am lonely. And what I've found is that, you know, I think that they maybe, if they were in my shoes, would be lonely. And so, I mean, that makes me a little sad because I don't want anybody to feel when they're not in a relationship that they are alone, that they are lonely. Yes, you're alone because you're not in a relationship, but you don't have to be sad or, you know, fearful of being by yourself or, any other negative emotion that people, you know, associate with loneliness. And the other thing I'd say is even when people are in a relationship, it doesn't mean that they're feeling fulfilled. And it doesn't mm-hmm. mean that they feel like they have a true companion. And I think we all know people that are in relationships, whether married or not, that are just kind of on two separate paths or coexisting. And I mean, I was in a relationship that went on for way too long. And, you know, it's I was lonely. I was lonely in that relationship. I was more lonely in that relationship than I have been on my dating journey. And at some wow. points I was very lonely, you know, dating, but I learned how to change that perspective. And so now I'm alone, but I'm very, very happy and I'm very fulfilled with what's in my life. So we need to stop assuming just because somebody's not in a relationship that they are lonely.
We're speaking with Christiana Chaffee, and her book is The Unapologetic Spinster. And if you're wondering what that is, stay with us. We're going to talk more about it. And in fact, Christiana, I'd like to talk a little bit about the concept of not settling. So I think that's another issue that many people get caught up in. But we're going to take a break. So everybody out there, you are watching or listening to Answers Network. We'll be right back.
Conflict International are experts at uncovering the truth. Our specialist team has decades of experience in providing a range of bespoke investigation and intelligence services to companies and individuals. Whether you need professional screening or background checks of employees, due diligence of potential clients or business partners, asset tracing services, or surveillance, Conflict International has a rapid response team on hand to get you to the heart of the matter. Our key strength is in our global capabilities. We can tap into an extensive network of trusted professional investigators based in most jurisdictions worldwide, enabling us to go almost anywhere a case takes us. Conflict International has decades of experience with a diverse range of skills among our team developed from backgrounds in military and security intelligence services, as well as practice lawyers. Visit our website today at conflictinternational.com to find out more about our services. That's conflictinternational.com. Global reach, local knowledge.
And we're back. You're listening to or watching Answers Network, and we are talking about self-love. We're talking about empowering women, and we are speaking with Christiana Chaffee about her book, The Unapologetic Spinster. So, Christiana, let's talk a little bit about settling. Obviously, in what you're doing as you're dating, and as you said, you know, you've had a whole lot of first dates. Let's talk about settling, where other people maybe are settling, and you are of the belief that there's no need to.
Yeah, well, I think settling is, by definition, right, is deciding to compromise what it is you maybe really want or need and taking something lesser, not to mean that people are lesser, but meaning like the fit is lesser than what you would ideally want. And I think something so important as love and who we choose to be in a long-term, you know, lifelong partnership with, for those who want to be in a lifelong partnership, I mean, I think it's so important to carefully choose and not settle. So not say, you know what, I've been at this game for so long and I just can't meet I just don't feel that connection that I've always hoped for. So I'm just going to see what good enough can come along and then just, you know, commit to them. I mean, to each their own. But for me, I am a strong believer, especially having been in a 10-year relationship that wasn't the right fit, that was settling, that I'm never going to settle again. And I think that comes also with the confidence of being alone, right? And so we just mm-hmm. talked about the difference between being alone and lonely and loneliness. So if I'm not looking for somebody to fill some gap of who I am or bring, you know, wait for a relationship in order to feel happy, if I'm finding happiness living my life as I want to live my life, well, then there's no need to settle. Then I can still dream big. It's no different than, you know, feeling like you need to settle for the dream job that you want, right? You might take multiple jobs till you get there, but you're holding out for that dream job or, you know, dream vacation, whatever you have. I think love is no different. You can dream big and you can have what you dream about.
Well, one of the things that you said actually right before this, but you also really go into it in the book, is you talk about self-love. And rather than settling, if you focus on self-love, there's a much better chance you're going to attract the person that you're looking for anyway. Is that about right?
Oh, I absolutely believe that. And I think that's the law of attraction. It is what you put out there is what you get in return. And it's across love and life, all aspects of life. I'm a big believer in that. And I think if we are looking, just like you said, if we're looking for somebody else to fill our gaps or fix us or support us in ways that we are not able to support ourselves, like basic things of, you know, emotional support, or we're asking too much from somebody else as well. And so we're almost setting them up to, you know, let us down, because it's not their job in a relationship to make you happy. It's not your job in a relationship to make somebody else happy. You know, your life is about you. And you're, you know, so loving yourself is an absolute necessity. And as you do that, I do believe, you know, if you're into, you know, vibrational matches and all of that, I personally am. I think you just give off a kind of aura about yourself that's, you know, the right person is going to find that attractive.
Yeah. And I couldn't agree more. And, you know, and one of the things of my own story is that after going through a divorce, I was pretty down, and I ended up meeting a man in a men's group that was just glowing with happiness. And he had found the second love of his life. And everything that he said was all about the fact that he says, you need to write it down. You need to put everything down. He said his mistake was that he got married very young, and he just thought, well, you get kind of in love or in lust, and then you make everything work out. And he said what he decided was you write everything down so that you know what you're looking for, and that they're a match, you know, emotionally, they're a match financially, they're a match spiritually. And he went through all of these things. And so I was excited. I went, okay, great, I'm going to do this. And I wrote all of that stuff down. I broke it down into five different categories. And I was so proud of myself. And I read it a few times. And I paused and I looked at it and I said, no, I need to now write something of who I need to be to deserve that person. And I rewrote a completely different thing that focused on who I needed to be, which included what you talk about, which is self-love. And sure enough, for me, sometime after that, I met someone and realized that there is a whole nother level of love that if you wait, you might find it.
I love that story, Alan. I mean, how great is that, that you put the time to figure out what it is you wanted, and then you actually were open enough to change that, you know, and tweak it to make it like, no, this is actually what I need to do for myself. And I think that is about becoming somebody that is attracting that equal, because who wants to be in a relationship with somebody that's not their equal, right? Like equal, whatever, however you define equal, like I want a partner. I think that's why it's called a partnership. It's not called anything else. It's called a partnership. And I think that's a beautiful, beautiful story. And I think that it's because it's purposeful, right? That's great.
Well, let's talk a little bit about humor. I believe in it in all aspects of life. I think that, you know, I'm somebody who loves comedy clubs. You know, there's the comedians that I love. There's one in particular that, you know, he refers to it as comedy as medicine. Well, there were times in which, as reading your book, I felt like I was having medicine, because there were some laugh out loud moments. So tell us a little bit from a writing standpoint. How did you balance the sort of serious aspects of, you know, focusing on self-love, of acknowledging that sometimes there are bad fits, but at the same time, the lighter side of some really, really funny moments?
Well, I do think humor is medicine. I do believe that. I think that you laugh and you make yourself feel better. Just like when you cry, you feel sick to your stomach. So for me in writing this book, again, it was changing my perspective, and I definitely didn't want this to be a Debbie Downer type of book. So from my book cover, which has my cat on a leash, you know, me and my cat on a leash. I mean, I think you look at the book and you say, this is not going to, I hope people say this is not a Debbie Downer book. There's going to be something different or, you know, a bit funny. I'm almost making fun of the fact that I have a cat, right, as a spinster, and that's the love of my life is my cat. And, you know, so I do think humor is very important in having fun. So I would say the book is about 75%, you know, of these chapters are humorous. Now, mm-hmm. It's not like every word is laugh out loud. There's definitely parts of it that I wanted people to laugh out loud. And I'm glad to hear that you did. There's about 25% of it that, you know, there are a few chapters in there that are, you know, some people read them and they cried. I cry mm-hmm. when I read the stories because they're still very emotional, very raw and real, but they're also very relatable. It's, you know, stories right. and instances where, you know, love didn't work out or somebody fell in love where the other person, you know, in my story, you know, I did not fall in love and this person did. And I had to end that with them, and that's heartbreaking for them. And so it's kind of showing the different angles of modern love and the journey of us trying to find that and find the best right fit for us. But humor, I think, is important because there's so many missed for all the times you've fallen in love, right? How many times have you not when you've gone on a date?
So. Yep. Well, we've got another question, and as I read this question over, I realized you've kind of answered the first half of this question, but I think that the second part of this question, I think, could be very interesting. This one reads, as a single woman in her early 70s, I found the title of your book very interesting. In my youth, being referred to as a spinster was considered an insult. How did you come up with the title? An unapologetic spinster, and what did it mean to you? And secondly, again, as a single woman in her early 70s, what are some suggestions that you would have for someone like myself that would still like to meet a man and have him in my life? And this is from Madeline in Charlotte, North Carolina.
Well, thank you, Madeline, for the question. So hopefully I answered spinster is not meant to be an insult, but it is meant to poke at society, right? It's to say mm-hmm. this word, this concept is not okay. And we need to change how we think about women versus how we think of a bachelor, right? As a mm-hmm. for most cases, a positive undertone. So my number one thing would say, it doesn't matter what your age is. It doesn't matter what where you are in your life and what you've done in your life to date. It is never too late for love. That is my absolute number one thing. So I think having the mentality that you are, you know, you're on the cusp of meeting somebody, that is, I think, a very healthy, regardless of anybody's age, just feeling like it is imminent and believing that you deserve it and it's possible. That's the number one thing. So number two would be similar to the advice given before, get out there and, you know, what interests you? Where is your community? Where can you go meet other people? You know, do you like to go for walks, you know, during the afternoon when it's not too hot out there, not in the summer maybe, but like, what are you doing and where are you, where you can meet other people and mm-hmm. Have fun.
Yep. And if I can add something, for Madeline, my stepmother, who is a wonderful person, and in fact, she's one of those people that I consider an angel in everything that she does. And she joined a group of women called the Red Hat Society, and they travel all over the world as a group. But what I And it got to the point to where I would see them. I would see groups of them. So I learned that there's smaller groups of them, and then they have a national thing, and they all get together. But in some of the smaller groups, and I went to a dinner club, I guess you would call it. So there was entertainment, but it was also dinner and drinks and stuff. And there was a group of women, and they were the most fun. And most of them were all about 20 years older than me at the time. But I ended up dancing with a bunch of them because, you know, as I, you know, they were going over and they were grabbing men that were at tables that were about their age and trying to pull them up to dance. And some of them, these guys were just sitting there going, no, I don't dance and stuff. So I saw that and I went, no, I'll go. And then, but before I knew it, that I was having a ball, they were having a ball, but then some of these men, you know, were looking at me and they're going, hey, maybe we should get up there. We don't want this young guy to be dancing with all these women. But what I'm saying is that there are groups that you can join that will sort of help bring that out. And mm-hmm. I think that, you know, in this day and age, if you can get out, you know, and just spend some time with people, that you're going to find somebody.
Yes, that is fantastic. What a great example of positivity rubbing off on other people, right? Because the people, the older men who didn't want to get up and dance at first in that story, they probably maybe were a little self-conscious or yeah. for whatever reason, they just, you know, and then they see you out there having a blast and they're like, I can have a blast too. And they get up and they do it. And I think that is what dating is all about. And, you know, being yourself and having fun is putting yourself out there, being a little bit vulnerable, but also just really enjoying the moment and the people that you're with.
I couldn't agree more. So let's talk about the book again. And really, you know, what's the message that you hope readers take away from the book, you know, regarding the importance of embracing your own personal qualities and really celebrating yourself?
Yeah, I think I hope the readers take away that they're not by themselves in this journey, right? That it's a balance of you're not the only one going through this, but also in this journey of going through it by yourself, you've got to appreciate everything that you offer yourself. So putting yourself first, it's an opportunity to be selfish in a way, right? Of you don't have somebody else of like, hey, honey, what do you want to do this Friday night? No, Friday night plans are up to you. You get to decide that. And so while you have this moment in your life where you're unattached, what is it that how do you want to spend your life? And what is it that you want to do with that precious time? And so if you can learn to embrace and put yourself first, I think through that comes more self-confidence and more self-love, which we can all benefit from. And you're just, you know, you're where you're at. Don't compare yourself to other people because that is a recipe for, you know, getting sad or, you know, wondering why things aren't working out. And I'll share, I have an identical twin sister. So for, you know, and she did the illustrations of my chapters to help make it a little more fun. But she's an identical twin sister, went to West Point as well, was in the Army for 5 years also. But she's been married for 15 years and has 3 kids. So how, you know, it's, if I were to compare myself to others, I'd compare myself to my identical twin sister. And yet we're very different, but that's her life. And that she has her own life journey and challenges. She did not have breast cancer. I did, you know, it's these different things that make us, unique in our journeys, and have compassion for yourself and have an appreciation for what you're bringing to the table, and don't watch and, look, especially with all the social media out there, compare yourself to other people. That's not helpful. So.
Now you mentioned the breast cancer, and I also mentioned it in the introduction, and I tied it to resilience. But I mean, share with us how much do you attribute your resilience to that? How much to the military? I mean, you went to Iraq. There's so many things that you've done, and I think resilience is one of the things that's really lacking in our society right now. We have a lot of people that are, you know, offended by the slightest little thing. So I think resilience needs a comeback. Yes. So let's talk about your resilience and how that's affected and shaped who you are?
Yes. So I think definitely resilience for me, building my own resilience, I'm sure started probably in my upbringing, which had something to do with choosing to go to West Point, because all three of the kids, my brother, my sister and I, we all went to West Point. And then being at West Point creates, a toughness of who, perseverance, resilience. And then deploying for, deploying twice in my 5 years in active duty, I think that definitely had a big part of it, right? Because there's a lot of uncertainty, just like there's uncertainty mm-hmm. in dating, there's uncertainty when right. you're in war, and you've got to kind of remain flexible and trust your intuition, trust your skills, trust a lot of stuff. And so resilience is knowing you're going to make it through. But, I then got out of the Army, and it was almost 10 years after I got out of the Army when I was diagnosed with stage 1 breast cancer. And I would say I hit absolute rock bottom in my life so far. It was not when I was deployed in Iraq and I was, in combat, and that was not a pleasant time. But rock bottom for me was being alone in my house and also lonely in my house, diagnosed with breast cancer and not really having a close network of friends, because I was still fairly new to Boston. And I really struggled. I struggled with my sense of self. And so I think I hit rock bottom, and that was a big catalyst for me to come out of how I had been, the inner narrative I had for myself. I had a lack of self-love. I had a lack of self-confidence. I mean, when I was in the Army, I had some great self-confidence, but I think lack of love was an all-time low when I got breast cancer. And it was, for me, it was, how am I going to change how I think about myself and my life? And I did a lot of work. I mean, I could list all the things I've done, and it's always a journey, right? But sure. For me, breast cancer that was 5 years ago, 5 years cancer-free, I would say that was the biggest aspect of creating resilience in my life, because it also was the catalyst for a lot of positive change that I made that is now part of who I am and has helped me to be very happy in my life.
I love that. We're going to take a break, but when we come back, let's touch on, has your confidence been something that has worked against you a little bit from the standpoint of men that are a little bit intimidated by it? So for everybody, stay with us. We'll be right back. You're listening to or watching Answers Network. Having a teenager at risk who is going through a traumatic experience can be difficult on parents, siblings, and all who are working with that young person. No family should have to go through this process alone. West Shield Adolescent Services is here to ensure you don't have to. Many of the psychologists and psychiatrists we work with have spoken about the stress families go through. Not just the young person, but the parents needing to get their child to a program where they can get the help they need. West Shield aims to lessen that stress. Every case goes through a thorough intake process with one of our knowledgeable, compassionate intake coordinators. We want to know the likes, the dislikes, and the fears of each child. This important information is taken into consideration when choosing the best suited team member for each individual teenager. West Shield agents come from all different walks of life, giving us a diverse group of team members to ensure a personalized, compassionate experience for every teenager. This allows us to make certain every young person we work with gets to the chosen program in the best possible state of mind. We contacted over 600 of the youth we've worked with in the past to see where they're at now. 97% of these individuals told us how much their lives had improved, that they had better relationships with their friends and families, had gone on to marry, have kids, and were now using the skills they learned in their program to raise their own children. Our role of transporting at-risk teenagers is a vital step in the process of ensuring a youth's ability to thrive in their new environment, and is a role we don't take lightly. The recovery process can be a long one, but like any journey, it started with a single step. And we're back. You're listening to or watching Answers Network. We're talking with Christiana Chaffee, and her book is An Unapologetic Spinster. Okay, when we went to break, I asked the question about confidence. What happens when you have such great confidence that it actually appears to intimidate some of the men?
That is a great question. I have no actual proof that my confidence has intimidated men. I don't know. I think that's a valid hypothesis and one that, you know, people have told me. I've been very successful in my career and combat veteran, and I have a big personality, and I wrote a book about my dating. I think there's aspects of if my confidence was maybe too much for somebody, I think it's possible I would intimidate them. But I guess I'll answer that by saying I have no actual proof. No man I've dated has said, "You are too confident for me and I'm intimidated." I have had a couple people say, "You're too independent for me." Meaning like, cause I, you know, lived on my own. I took care of myself. I didn't need them. I want somebody in my life, but I don't need somebody in my life. So I'll pause there and say, that's the best response to that, question.
Okay. So again, for everybody out there, if you pick up the book, what you'll find is just a lot of great stories. Again, some seem heartfelt. On the other hand, some are just hilarious. So I know you mentioned a little bit about the dating Bigfoot, but share with us another one of your most memorable or surprising dates that you have shared in your book.
I'd say one of the most fun dates I had was, it was only one date. It was somebody I met on a dating app in Boston. And I thought at first his profile was a joke because it was a picture of him in a van down by the river. And that was kind of his title. I live in a van down by the river. And I was like, okay, that's kind of funny. And it got me asking him some questions. And before you know it, we're chatting. And no, he really does live in a van down by the river, which was the Charles River in Boston. But he wasn't from Boston. He'd actually rolled into town like the day before, and he was going to be leaving and heading, I think, to Ohio or back to where somewhere the next day. And so he really wanted to go out on a date with me, but I had actually plans that evening. But he actually called me in the app, which I appreciated, because he said, let me explain, why I really want to go on a date with you. And I'm not weird, or I'm actually this normal guy. And this is why I live in a van. And I like this person. I like his energy. I think he's funny. And at a bare minimum, because it was during COVID at the time, we'll walk around the city, during daylight hours, and it'll at least be a fun interaction. So I write in that chapter about meeting him and how I kind of went from having judgment about him and why he lived in a van to thinking this guy who ended up looking a lot like a celebrity that I had a crush on when I was young. I mean, he was just a great guy, not my guy. Right. I wasn't even going to stay in Boston. But it was such a pleasant conversation and engagement with somebody that made for a good chapter, I thought.
Yeah, I agree. And it also, I think it points towards the idea of give people a chance, listen, they might surprise you. So I like that. The time has absolutely flown by. I've so enjoyed this. Share with everybody, what would be the best way if somebody wants to get in touch with you? Actually, maybe somebody's watching and they're going, okay, well, now I want to date her.
So if they want to date me, I have two websites. I have my website for my book is unapologeticspinster.com. I have a date me tab on there. Again, it's a poke at, like as a marketer, I'm not on the apps, but I do write a little funny thing about somebody wanted to date me. But for those who would like to stay in touch, I am, as you mentioned in the beginning, an empowerment ambassador. So I help empower women to live their most authentic lives, to help them in business and in life. So the best place to reach me is at my website, which you're going to put in the notes, christianachaffee.com, as well as find me on LinkedIn.
Perfect. And in fact, so I know you have, do you have any speaking engagements coming up that you want to talk about here?
I don't have anything that's, I guess, for public. I have different associations and groups that I'm working with, but I am also, I've just launched the coaching business that I have. So that's my big focus, and speaking is something I do on the side as well.
Sounds great. So for everybody, go to the website and all the information will be there for you. So, so Christiana, thank you so much for coming on, for writing the book. This has been a blast.
This has been a lot of fun. Thank you so much, Alan, for having me.
You're very welcome. And for everybody out there, be with us next week when we are joined by Kristen Hanna as she discusses her new book, The Woman. And it's, by the way, it's International Women's Day on March 8th, and which is a global celebration of women's economic, political, and social achievements. For everybody out there, please visit our archives of past interviews at Answers Network. Or just subscribe to the show through Apple Podcasts, iHeartRadio, Spotify, SoundCloud, YouTube, Rumble, Spreaker, and many other popular podcast platforms. In fact, I was on, I think I was on Amazon Prime or something, and one of our shows popped up. So it's even places that I don't know. If you like what you hear, please leave a review. It helps us reach more people. And I want you to know it's greatly appreciated. The next time you're on Instagram, Facebook, or X, please remember, stop by our page, check out some of our latest shows. If you like them, please like us and spread the word. For everyone out there, please be good human beings and focus on the positive things that you can pay forward.
You're listening to Answers Network with Alan Cardoza, only on LA Talk Radio.